I want to start this episode of Ball About the South on a sad note, sort of a sad note anyway. I want to pay my respects to one Arthurine Lucy. Arthurine Lucy is the first ever black student at the University of Alabama. She died over this past week. And actually, she was really just, I'm not to say that she has not been recognized. She has been, but she was recognized with the naming of a building there at the University of Alabama. And she, that was just very recently, like in the last couple of weeks, actually last few days. And it's really kind of wild that she passed as soon as that happened. Just days, you know, again, had the building dedicated to her. And she was at the dedication ceremony and everything. And just unfortunate that there was just a few days before her death. But she lived to be 92 years old. So she had a long, long life. And, of course, a very important life as an activist and everything. You know, like I said, of course, the very first African-American student at the University of Alabama. May she rest in peace. What's good? C Wood back at you again with another hard-hitting, jam-packed edition episode of Ball About the South with C Wood. Ball About the South, it is that sports podcast where we talk real sports and we do it with real Southern flavor. Just want to welcome you back in and thank you for coming in. My name is Kerry Wood. Just call me C Wood for short, at C Wood on Sports on Twitter and IG. That's where you can find me. And I definitely would enjoy it if you join me there from time to time. Chop up a little sports with me. That's what I do mainly. I talk some other stuff here and there, but you know, I try to keep it really light as I possibly can. Obviously, I'd like you to subscribe to this podcast, Ball About the South. Subscribe so that you'll know when I drop new episodes. I drop episodes pretty much every week. There have been a couple times that I was absent or whatever, but you know, I'm going to drop something on the weekly, usually toward the end of the week, but I'm going to try to work on doing it more toward the middle of the week from now on if I can, especially this coming week, because this coming week is a pretty big week for me. It's always one of my favorite weeks of the sports calendar. Because we are in March and it is conference tournament time. We are in March Madness, baby. I'm telling you, man, this is, you know, March Madness has always been my favorite sport. Well, sorry, not my favorite sport, my favorite sporting event. Just, you know, I love the tournament. I love especially the first few days of the tournament. The first 2 days are just, you know, oh my goodness. I mean, I usually take off work if I can. And try to enjoy all the games. I try to enjoy all the upsets. I enjoy filling out my bracket and all that good stuff. And I just love the, you know, I love the drama of the first, you know, few days of the tournament. I love the tournament as a whole anyway. But, you know, the first few days are really where the tournament really is at its most exciting. And, you know, then again, the conference tournaments are really good as well. I love the conference tournaments because I think it is a perfect build-up. You sit there and you see some teams out there that have to have a strong run in their conference tournament or have to win their conference tournament to get in. I mean, you think about moments like Kemba Walker, you know, being in the Big East tournament that season, and that Syracuse game that went like, it seemed like it was a 24-hour game. Went about, what, 6-7 overtimes or whatever it was. I think that was the same season, if I'm not mistaken. I should have looked that up. I'm almost certain it was the same season, but I could be wrong about that. That UConn basically came out of nowhere. They were looked at as a bubble team at best in the Big East. They end up winning the Big East tournament, and then they go ahead and win the whole thing. They won the, you know, they won the Big East tournament, and it propelled them into the NCAAs, and they ended up winning the whole shebang. That's the kind of stuff that I like in March. And, you know, again, I just think it's the best sporting event out there, in my opinion. I mean, I understand about the Super Bowl. I get it. It's a great event. World Series, NBA Finals, all of those are fantastic events. Even Stanley Cup playoffs, things like that. I love watching the Stanley Cup Finals because, unfortunately, I would love to watch more of the NHL, but I'm such an NBA fan, I don't know, it's just hard to kind of mix in the time to do it and really do it and really really soak all of it in. So, but anyway, man, that, you know, I'm just glad to be into March. Obviously, the year is flying by, which is ridiculous. Next week, we'll be back on daylight savings time next Sunday, so which I like that. And, of course, at that time, we'll have a bracket. Next Sunday is Selection Sunday. I'm looking forward to that big time. But we're going to get a little bit more into college hoops and a little bit later in the show as in, if we get into my SEC segment. I call that Around the SEC. But right now, you see what the title of my of my episode of this episode is, and it is Ja Mazing, simply Ja Mazing. And then, obviously, I'm referring to Ja Morant, the do-everything electric point guard for the Memphis Grizzlies. This dude, man, unfortunately, I don't know, excuse me, I'm doing this after the Grizzlies kind of laid an egg on national TV against the Boston Celtics the other night. So, and maybe it doesn't look quite as good as it probably did if I put this show out Tuesday after that Monday night spectacle that Ja Morant put on, man. 52 points, the first ever player in the history of the Memphis Grizzlies franchise to score 50 points. Man, and you know, when I thought about it, I was like, wow, that's kind of wild that he's the first guy. But then I sat there and I thought about it. I'm like, well, I guess it's not really all that surprising for him to be the first 50-point scorer in a game because, I mean, you think about Memphis, you think about a team that grinds it out, basically, and you sit there and you look at their Twitter hashtag. It's Grind City. Hashtag Grind City is the Grizzlies hashtag, and that's what they do. Their franchise has been about for all these years. And so I can understand that even guys like Zach Randolph or whoever and Mike Conley, you know, although, you know, obviously you could see them scoring 50 points in the game, it's not surprising that they haven't. Now, I'm not really sure if that extends back to when the Grizzlies were in Vancouver and they had guys like Sharif Abdul-Rahim on their team and, you know, and some other guys that they had. So I'm not really sure if that extends back to them. But, again, still, fantastic night by Ja Morant. And to add to his 52 points were the absolute highlight rim plays that he put on against the San Antonio Spurs in that basketball game. I mean, you know, man, you sit there and you look back at it, and he sat there and he posterized Pirtle, the big guy at the center for San Antonio. I mean, that was a poster of all posters. I mean, and this dude, Ja Morant, I mean, there was nothing Pirtle could have done about it at all, but just sit there and watch and just pose for the camera. I mean, Ja Morant, man, I'm telling you, that was crazy dunk. But then, for me, the bigger play, the better play was the shot at the end of the first half, where he sits there, he goes up and gets the pass, and I mean, and basically in one motion, kind of twists away or whatever from the defender and puts the ball up and hits the shot at the buzzer. I mean, that was just ridiculous. But for me, while yes, John Morant was at the end of that play and he was the guy that made the shot, the pass by Steven Adams was as impressive or more impressive than the shot. I mean, this dude threw that ball, that's 94 feet, baseline to baseline, on a line. And John Morant was the only dude that was going to catch that pass. He was the only dude. It was like he was in the back of the end zone. It was kind of like, I don't know, man. It was kind of like Patrick Mahomes, because I think I tweeted it out. I was like, man, who does Steven Adams think he is? Does he think he's Patrick Mahomes right now throwing passes like this? And does he think he's throwing Travis Kelce in the back of the end zone? That's kind of what that looked like. And also kind of, you know, even though it was a shorter pass, obviously, kind of, you know, the way Ja Morant had to kind of contort his body or whatever to take the shot, and the way he had to go up and get it, kind of reminded me a little bit, and I don't know why, but it reminded me of Ben Roethlisberger's pass to Santonio Holmes in the back of the end zone in the Super Bowl to win that Super Bowl against the Cardinals. I mean, it was that pass was unbelievable. 94 feet on the line. Ja Morant goes up and gets it and shoots it in one motion. And there's your game. Well, you have the end of the half at the buzzer shot. Just ridiculous stuff, man. I'm telling you. And, so, you know, you sit there and you look at that. Obviously, man, from that point on, I knew exactly what I was going to I knew what my subject or my the focus of this episode was going to be. It was going to be on John Morant, at least, you know, for a few minutes anyway. We got a lot of other things to get into, but John Morant had to lead the show off. Despite the fact, again, like I said, they had a, you know, pretty bad loss there against the Boston Celtics. But then again, you sit there and look at it a little bit deeper. It's not as bad a loss as it may seem, especially with the Celtics playing the way they've been playing over, you know, I'd say what, the last month or so, month or two. I mean, and the thing about Boston, you know, obviously they have guys like Jason Tatum. And Brown right now, unfortunately, he's hurt. But Jaylen Brown, that is, their bread has been buttered on the defensive end of the floor. That is where they have been really, they have made their push. That is where they have excelled during this run that they've been on, like I said, over the last month or two. So not really that big a deal. Where it's not, you know, it's not as bad as it seems for Memphis to go into Boston and kind of struggle offensively the way that they did on Thursday night. You just didn't like to see it on TNT because obviously, even though John Morant, this dude is becoming a superstar right before our eyes, obviously the Grizzlies aren't getting that many national TV appearances. Not really. Obviously, they're getting more than they used to, but in comparison to teams like the Lakers and the Warriors and, you know, the Heat, maybe, I guess, to a degree, even though the Heat game the other night was not on television against the Milwaukee Bucks, which that turned out to be a classic almost, as the Bucks came back from way down to beat Miami the other night. I mean, you just don't see the Grizzlies on national TV that often. But something tells me some of that's going to start changing. And it's because of Ja-mazing Ja Morant. Simply Ja-mazing, that is. And this dude is still averaging around 27 points a game. And it's just, you know, 6 assists. Just doing his thing. And the thing, you know, thing I think you have to like about this kid even more is that he seemed to be a guy that was, you know, kind of a guy that was going to get downhill. He was a guy that was going to do most of his damage in the paint, mid-range maybe, but didn't think he would be really a great perimeter shooter, and he's still not a great perimeter shooter, but it's obviously that he's working on that. I mean, you're seeing that three-point shot get a lot better here lately. He is just becoming a complete player, and he's becoming a complete superstar right before our eyes. And I've got another little segment that I'm going to do a little bit later in the show. I'm going to do a little bit more NBA. It got me kind of thinking, man, looking at this dude and a couple other dudes in the league. I have my favorite five players that I have ever. And when I say favorite, I mean favorite players, not who I think are the best players ever in the NBA or whatever. My favorite players, my favorite players that I've watched in the NBA, right? So I'm going to kind of probably tell you how old I am by saying a couple of these dudes. And what I want to do, though, in this segment that I'm speaking of, I want to say, you know, what guys that are currently playing today could possibly break my top five list. My top five list, man. Now, you guys know I'm a Houston Rockets fan, diehard. My number one guy is the Dream. Hakeem Olajuwon is my favorite all-time player ever. I mean, this dude was just incredible. Things he, you know, did as a center that, yeah, we've seen some other guys that are really athletic that are doing some of the things that he did. But he kind of did it first, even though you wouldn't necessarily look at him and think of him as being as athletic as some of the centers that we've seen of late. This dude had it all. Okay, so, and then, of course, he led the Rockets to the only two championships that we've had. That was a great time, man. It just was back there in 94, 95. That was fantastic. And he will always be my number one overall player. I don't see that changing. My number two, you know, he is the only Rocket I have in my top five. Okay. Number two and three is one I kind of fight over, man. Kobe Bryant or Magic Johnson. I kind of fight, you know, I could put either one in either spot. I can make an argument to put Kobe number two, big time. All, you know, everything that he did. May he rest in peace. Still unbelievable that he's gone. It really doesn't make any sense. But then I look at Magic, I could put him number two. I could interchange both those dudes. So for me, two and three are Kobe and Magic. Number four is pretty solid, Dr. J. Dr. J at number four, man. Now, again, I saw him more on the back end of his career, but he still, for me, was one of my favorite players to ever watch. I mean, I just love watching this dude play. So I'm going to keep him at number four. And number five is one I fight with a lot. But I have to put Michael Jordan there, although I could go a lot of other places. I could go Allen Iverson, which is one of my favorite players as well. I mean, Allen Iverson is really close. He probably would be number six if I really sat there and thought about it. But Michael Jordan, man, you know, again, sitting there watching this dude play was just magical. So, basically, you see in my top five, and again, I just gave you really my top six. I don't have anybody from today's era. You know, again, and that's nothing, you know, if you guys are listening to this show and say, well, damn, what about LeBron? Look, I don't have anything against LeBron necessarily. I mean, there are some things that I have not liked in his career on the court. Now, dude off the floor is, you see all that he's done for the NBA and beyond. I mean, this dude is incredible. So I have no beef with this dude at all off the floor. On the floor, yeah, I think, you know, I would change some things. But you sit there and you look at the things that he's done for the game and then the things that he has done that you like on the floor, that I like on the floor that he's done, you have a lot of respect. He just is not in my top five. I'm not really sure he'd be in my top 10. I hadn't really gone that far necessarily, but who today could break that though? I'm not really sure. And I do have, I just gave you one name. Ja Morant, I think, could break that top five. I really do. I think he has the juice. There are a few other players that I'm going to bring up in a little bit later in the show as I talk a little bit more NBA. We'll get a little bit deeper into the NBA, looking at some playoff scenarios. We'll talk a little bit of this James Harden and Joel Embiid thing in Philadelphia, which is off to a fantastic start. We'll talk about the LA Lakers. These topics are not necessarily South related. I already know that. So, but this Laker thing, man, I've got to talk about it. I've got to get it off my chest. So we'll do that a little bit later in the show as we get into the NBA. But right now, man, I just wanted to, like I said, man, start off with Ja Morant. We'll talk a little bit more about Ja in that later segment. At any rate, we're going to take our first break of the show. When we come back, we're going to go around the SEC when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all, we're back. Ball About the South continues, and we'll start in on the SEC as we go around the SEC. It is my weekly segment where I talk all things here in the Southeastern Conference, man. And I want to start off, obviously, we have a lot of spring football about to begin in the next week or so. Alabama starts theirs on March 11th, which would be next Friday. So all the teams usually will, kind of start around the same time. Going to be interesting to see some position battles. I think probably are going to be very interesting for the Tide. They're going to have to replace a couple receivers, of course. We talked a little bit about the wide receivers last week's show, Jai Hall and those guys. Who's going to be the ones that are going to step up and replace John Metchie and Jameson Williams and Slade Bolden? Now, Slade Bolden, I mention him because the NFL Combine is going on right now. And Slade Bolden ran 4.63 as the wide receivers did their workouts on Thursday. Slade looked pretty good from what I saw. I saw a lot of chatter on Twitter and everything, on social media about Slade. He ran a 4.63 40. Obviously, that's not great. That's not great in today's terms by any stretch of the imagination. We get that. But if you sat there and you looked at Slade Bolden the last few years playing for Alabama, you knew that this guy was not a speed burner. This dude is not possessed with fantastic speed or anything. We knew that. So for me, I think 4.63 is pretty respectable. I think. And, and a lot of people got down on this guy over the last year, maybe even two seasons. He had a couple drop passes in a couple games. I remember the one in the Florida game where he dropped the touchdown. Alabama ended up winning that game, though. I mean, he's not the only one. I mean, and he was wide open on that play. I mean, I'm not really sure what happened because there was nowhere. You see a lot of guys drop the ball because they may take their eye off the ball because they're wanting to make a play and run upfield. He was in the end zone, so he wasn't trying to run anywhere. There was no need for him to run anywhere. So I don't know what happened to him on that play. But Alabama came back and won that game anyway, so it wasn't a huge deal. But it was, it was a curious drop, and he's had a couple of those in his career. I'm not going to sit here and deny that. But for my money, you sit there and you look at his body of work as a whole. This dude has been one of the more reliable players on this offense the last couple of seasons. When you needed a first down, and we saw it even in the national championship game. He made a couple of big first downs. We saw it against in the playoff game. We saw it against Georgia in the SEC title game. This dude made plays, man. I mean, and Nick Saban trusted him. And that's just what it came down to. We saw early in the season he's also a punt returner. Well, obviously he's not as dynamic as some other guys might be because, again, he's not as fast. JoJo Earl is a guy that came in from high school last season. He is a guy that I did not mention in that wide receiver group last year because he did get a lot of play above guys like a Jai Hall, like Javon Baker. He even got more play early in the season than Trayshawn Holden, even though Trayshawn Holden did come in and play a lot later in the season. But JoJo Earl, maybe 2-3 games into the season, he kind of became the punt returner because he showed some promise. I mean, he showed that he could be electrifying with it and he could make some big plays. He never took one back for a touchdown, but he had a couple of big returns. The problem, I'm not going to say problem. I think the thing with Nick Saban is that he wants a guy that he knows he can rely on just to catch the ball. So Slade was the guy that he turned to more often than not to return punts. And a lot of people got annoyed by that. They said, well, man, JoJo Earl needs to be the guy. And I'm like, well, maybe that may be true, but we've got to sit there and look at how Nick Saban, how his line of thinking is. And his line of thinking is, look, man, I don't necessarily need him to return a punt for a touchdown or anything. I just need to make sure that we're going to catch the ball. We're going to field the punt correctly. So a lot of people got annoyed about that. A lot of people did not like Slade Bolton. A lot of Bama fans is what I'm talking about when I say people. And, I understood some of it. On the other hand, this dude was extremely reliable. And I've seen it so many times. I kind of talked about it at there toward the end of the season. I was like, man, when Slade, he does have a year of eligibility left, or he did have a year of eligibility left if he wanted to use that, but he decided to go ahead and go to the NFL. And of course, that was another conversation. There was another time to what is Slade Bolden thinking? He's not ready for the NFL. And I'm sitting there like, I'm not really sure what y'all are looking at. I mean, y'all watching the same dude that I'm watching. And I was like, look, have you seen the New England Patriots play? Have you seen a couple of their wide receivers that are built the same stature, saying they're kind of building the same mold as Slade Bolden is? We're talking about guys like Danny Amendola. We're talking about guys like Wes Welker. We've seen it time and time again with Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. So, of course, there's a running joke now that basically Bill Belichick has already decided who he's going to pick. Slade Bolden is already headed to New England, and we're still 2 months out from the draft. And he's, and now he runs a 4.63, and now I'm seeing the memes on Twitter of Bill Belichick kind of salivating at the sight or at the thought of Slade Bolden becoming a New England Patriot. It's really funny, but on the serious tip, man, this dude has the ability to do it. So I'm not really sure where he's going to land. It would be obviously that would be a great place for him to land. We'll see how it works out. Another guy you could kind of compare Slade Bolden to is Cole Beasley. He's kind of a slot receiver right now for the Buffalo Bills, but I saw where he has been given the permission to seek a trade from Buffalo, so it's not looking like he's going to be back in Buffalo next season, which that would obviously be pretty interesting in itself. But yeah, Slade Bolden, I thought 4.63 was pretty respectable in my opinion. While I'm quickly talking about the NFL, we'll go further with a couple other guys, at least one other guy in the SEC, another wide receiver from Alabama, and that would be one Amari Cooper. He is The Dallas Cowboys are talking about either releasing him or trading him, and which would be obviously pretty interesting. They have decided on Michael Gallup, who was a wide receiver that looked really good this past season. They're going to look to maybe feature him more. And, of course, CeeDee Lamb would be the other guy on the other side of the field. So they're going to go in another direction. So it's going to be interesting to see where Amari Cooper lands. It'll be very interesting to see how that turns out. Amari Cooper still, he's had his injury problems, whatever, but for me, he's still one of the best route runners in the NFL. So it'll be, like I said, it'll be very interesting to see where the former Alabama receiver will end up. Another guy to look at so far in the combine there in Indianapolis is Treylon Burks. He's a wide receiver, of course, out of Arkansas, and he is looked at as being a possible first-round pick for someone. I think he definitely has the talent. He has the juice to be a really good player at the next level. He ran a 4.5. Now, actually, the first time he ran a 4.55, which for me was a little bit disappointing. Now, I've never really thought of Treylon Burks as being a burner. I never thought of him being a guy that, you know, that just blows you away with his speed. But, you know, he 4.55 was, I thought, was pretty a little bit disappointing. I thought he would probably get into the 4.45 range, somewhere in that space. So not like he's way off of, you know, where I thought he could be. But then he did improve to a 4.5 on the second run, so obviously that's a lot better. And, you know, I think that's going to be good for him. Treylon Burks is obviously going to garner a lot of attention as you sit there and you look at some of the top receivers in this draft. But then, of course, you sit there and you look at Chris Olave. Now, I'm not really sure which one is going to be his official time. I'm not, or maybe if any of the officials times are going to be official or whatever. Chris Olave is the wide receiver out of Ohio State. This dude was reported to have run a 4.29 at first. But then I saw where it was more like a 4.39. So that time changed. I'm not sure how, you know, why that was, how that happened, but that was what was reported. I think it was Thursday evening at first, 4.29, which is just absolutely blazing, which when you sit there and you look at that, I mean, Chris Olave, a lot of people have him as the top receiver in this draft. A lot of people have him as the best route runner in this draft. And you sit there and add him running a sub 4.3, are you kidding me? I was like, there's no question this dude's going to be the first receiver taken off the board. But then they changed it to a 4.39, which is still a really good time for a guy that a lot of people see a lot of ability and a lot of upside in at the next level. So, yeah, you know, the former Ohio State receiver, he's going to get him a bag big time coming up here in a couple months and when that draft goes down. I really would love to see Jameson Williams be able to run that time, you know, run at the combine and everything. But of course, he was unable to with the injury that he sustained in the Georgia game. So unfortunately, we're not going to see him. I think he probably could have gotten close to that 4.3 range as well. I don't think there's any question about that. Saw a lot of really good times with some of those wide receivers the other night. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of teams looking for wide receivers in this draft. I don't think there's any question about that. You look at a couple other guys, man. Brian Robinson Jr. and running backs, you know, you had running backs, offensive linemen, those type guys going yesterday. Brian Robinson, former running back at the University of Alabama, ran a 4.53, which is not surprising to me. I think that's about where I would have thought that his time would be, and I think it's respectable. Obviously, he would have liked to have done a little bit better, but I think that's going to be pretty much good enough for him to stay in that conversation as maybe a day two draft pick, second, you know, maybe second, third, or probably be more third round, I'm thinking. But so I think that keeps him in pretty decent territory, I think. So that's just a few of the guys that were at the combine. We'll get deeper into that as we get closer to the draft and everything. We'll talk about some of the other guys coming out of the SEC. Obviously, Evan Neal, he is big tackle out of Alabama. He did not do any drills. He was there, but he did not do any drills at all. He is going to do all of his stuff at Pro Day when they're in Tuscaloosa. So, obviously, you know, again, it shouldn't be a big deal for him. Is he is definitely, I would think, going to be a top five pick, maybe the number one pick overall. I'm not really sure. We'll see how that goes. But Evan Neal is definitely going to go high in the draft. He is going to be a rich dude, no question about it. So that was just a little bit of college football as we're getting close to spring practice starting, NFL combines going on, crazy stuff going on there as well. Anyway, let's get into the hoops, man, since we are in March. And when you really, when you look at the SEC, there are six teams right now that are firmly in the tournament. I don't think there's any question about that. I don't think there's any of those six teams that have anything to worry about. Maybe LSU, if they were, you know, LSU is kind of like the last team of that of those six. I think even if they lose their game against Alabama on Saturday and lose their first game in the tournament, in the SEC tournament next week in Tampa, I still think they're good to go. So I'm going to say that they're a lock as well. They would be the only team. The other five, I think, are definitely securely in the tournament. Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Auburn. All of those teams are firmly in. So there's no really bubble to look at except for the Florida Gators. And, again, that was a pretty big loss last week. We kind of talked about it on last week's show, that loss to Arkansas. That was a big one, man. And if they could have gotten that win, I think you probably see them being on the better side of Joe Lunardi's bubble watch or whatever. So now they do get Kentucky at home on Florida. They do get Kentucky at home on Saturday, which that is a big spot for them. Kentucky, obviously a top six, seven, eight team or whatever in the country, and they are qualifies a quad one victory if Florida's able to get it. I'm not sure that would put them safely in the tournament. I don't think it would, but obviously it would help a lot. Florida has to have that game. If they don't get that one, then they're probably going to have to win the tournament or have to make a run at least to the championship game next Sunday. And both of those are long shots, obviously. So they really, you know, if they can win this Kentucky game on Saturday and then win a game or two in Tampa, then they could become that seventh team out of the SEC. So we'll have to see how that goes. And kind of looking at what we've seen here in the past week, a couple of the big games over the last couple of days or whatever, Auburn had a huge comeback win. Well, actually, it was kind of a tale of three games in that game that they played against Mississippi State the other night. They jump out to a huge lead, man, really quick in that game. Looked like they were going to run away with it. They were 39-20 at one point in the game. I think they were still up double digits, somewhere maybe like 15, I think it was maybe 40-26 or something like that at halftime. And then Mississippi State goes on a run, and you look up, and I'm telling you, it had to have been maybe like 8 minutes, 8-9 minutes left in the game. Auburn was still on 47 points, and Mississippi State had taken the lead. They had erased that 19-point lead. I mean, it was 39-20. Auburn had 39 points on the board, and I'm telling you, there had to have been like 7, 8, 9 minutes still left in the first half. That's how bad they were offensively from that point on. From, I say again, about the 7, 6, 7, 8 minute mark of the first half, all the way inside the 10 minute mark of the second half. They had scored like 12 points, 10 points or whatever. So, and you sit there and you think about this Auburn basketball team, you sit there and you wonder, why is that? I mean, how can a team with that type of talent, with that much talent, how can they go on scoring droughts like that? It's really crazy to think of. Now, Mississippi State's a pretty good defensive team, but they're not that good. I mean, Mississippi State is another team. If they could have finished that game off the other night, that game went to overtime. If they could have finished that Auburn game off, maybe they could have been on the bubble to get in the tournament. But right now, I think they'd have to win the entire thing to have a shot to get into the NCAA tournament. But that would have been a feather in their cap, but they could not finish the deal because Auburn was able to hang in there, and then they got their offense going there late in the second half and were able to tie that game back up, and then they kind of took over the game in the overtime and actually won the game by double digits. So, but again, you sit there and think about Auburn, man. You sit there and thinking about, this is a team that has Wendell Green Jr., who's a big-time shot maker from the perimeter. They have him at the guard spot. And of course, he's a guy that comes off the bench. He is the kind of their sixth man, though, which is, you know, I thought that would have changed by this point in the season, but it is not. He's still been coming off the bench. Then you have guys like Walker Kessler, and you have Flanagan, and you have several other guys, Keon Johnson, several other guys that are really good. And then you have Jabari Smith. Jabari Smith, again, we've talked about several times on this show, he's going to be a top two or three pick. Maybe the number one overall. It's going to be either him or Chet Holmgren, the guy out of Gonzaga, the unicorn. Okay, I mean, I'm just not really understanding how you go on a drought like they go on and when you have that type of talent. And then I sat there and I was, you know, as I'm watching the game, I'm sitting there like, man, I haven't seen Jabari Smith touch the ball hardly at all. I mean, forget about him taking a shot. I'm not even seeing him touch the ball. So then I'm like, man, well, this is probably one of his lower scoring games of the season, more than likely, because I haven't seen him take too many shots at all. And I'm talking in here in the second half. This is the second half of the game, and this is where Mississippi State is making their big run to take the lead. I look up, and Jabari Smith has 17 points. I was like, oh, wow, okay. But then I look and see that he had only taken 7 shots. And again, like I said, we were deep in the second half at that point. This team has got to lean on this dude a little bit more than that. I mean, you know, Bruce Pearl has never been a guy that's going to lean on one guy like that offensively. He's always had a team. His teams have always shared the ball, and I get that. And that's where you're supposed to be. But at some points, especially when things aren't going well, you need a guy that can say, you know what, just go get me a hoop. And Jabari Smith, I can't think of anyone better than that to do exactly that. So, you know, I'm not really sure, you know, how they're going to do that from this point forward. But for me, that is one of the things that they need to kind of change up. I think that Jabari Smith, excuse me, needs to be a little bit more active shooting the basketball. Look, he didn't end up with 13 shots in the game, which was more than anyone on the team turned out to be, because he did he was very active there toward the end of the second half and in overtime. He ended up with 27 points in that game. But for me, I just, you know, again, we have lapses like that. When you have lulls like that in your offense, to me, Jabari Smith should have the basketball in his hand. The offense should run through him. You look at Alabama the other night, another disappointing loss. I just don't know what to say about this basketball team, man. They go out and they beat South Carolina down. They beat them by 20. Of course, they didn't play well for 40 minutes in that game. They got out by like 20 in the first half, and they allowed South Carolina to get back in the game in the second half. But then they go out again and make another run, and they actually win the game by 20 there in Tuscaloosa last Saturday. But then they come out and they play Texas A&M. And I knew Texas A&M would be a bad matchup for Alabama because of their guard play, because of the way they defend. They're a team that traps and presses you all over the floor and things of that nature. And you're talking about an Alabama team that does not value the basketball. They turn the ball over a lot. That is not a good recipe. And that's exactly what happened. Alabama turned it over 19 times. A&M scored 29 points off of those turnovers. And then Alabama could not stay in front of their guards. Their guards scored 28 and 22 points respectively. And that's what you get. You get a double-digit 16-point embarrassing loss at home to Texas A&M Aggies. So, you know, again, look, man, we've talked about this team, the ups and downs, the roller coaster ride that this team has been on all season. I'm just not really sure what to expect anymore. I'm just really not sure. And you sit there and you see Nate Oates come up with his quotes at the end of the game in the post-game presser, and it's the same thing basically every loss. It's effort. There was lack of effort. I don't know why there was a lack of effort. And it's kind of time to stop that, man. It's kind of, and even though maybe that's what it was, it just seemed like it's time to say something else, man. We're tired of hearing it. We're tired of hearing that it's effort. We see that the effort is not necessarily up to par like it should be. It's not optimal. But you can't continue saying that. I mean, what are you doing about it? I mean, part of it is not on him. Part of it is this team really has no player that's really stepping up in a leadership role. So, you know, I'm not really sure what to think about this team. We know it's good enough. When they play well, they're good enough to beat some of the best teams in the country, like Gonzaga and Baylor and Houston. But then we know they're bad enough to lose to a team like Georgia, who's won two games in the conference this season. So who knows? Who knows what to expect? I mean, it's this kind of – it's really become a chore to sit there and try to figure this team out. Still a fan, still going to watch them, still going to talk about them on this show, but trying to figure this team out is, man, I don't know what to say. So, yeah, anyway, man, a lot going on. Obviously, if we're getting into March, we're going to talk about all these teams as we get into the tournament next week, and then, of course, into the big tournament 2 weeks from now. We're going to do break down every matchup, especially the ones when we get into the NCAA tournament, whether it's Kentucky, whether it's Alabama, whether it's Auburn, whether it's Tennessee, whether it's Arkansas, which Arkansas fans should be very excited about that team. This is a team, in my opinion, that can actually make the Final Four or at least make a run as deep as they did last year when they made the Elite Eight. I'm excited about SEC hoops. I think we could get another team into the Final Four, maybe two. I think it's possible depending on matchups, and we all know that's what the biggest thing is. If you get the right matchups in the NCAA tournament, there's no telling how far your team can go. Anyway, man, we're going to take a quick break again. We're going to come back. We're going to kind of get in a little bit into this quarterback carousel in the NFL. And some things I'm seeing are involving the Tennessee Titans and one Aaron Rodgers. I don't know what to think about that one. We're going to do that. And again, I promise you a little bit more NBA. We're going to do those things when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all, we're back again. Ball About the South continues, and we're going to get into a little bit of NFL again. This quarterback carousel is going to be crazy. I'm telling you, there are a lot of scenarios out there for a lot of teams, for several teams anyway. Of course, most of that always starts out. Any conversation that you have about the quarterback carousel in this league is going to start out with Aaron Rodgers. We're not sure that he's going to return to Green Bay. If I were a betting man, I'm going to say that he's not, which, you know, that would be pretty – that's going to be beyond newsworthy if that happens. Things I'm seeing here – I mean, obviously, there's been a couple rumors about Aaron Rodgers final house in the Nashville area. So, of course, that started a buzz about him being a Tennessee Titan. And now I'm seeing a little bit more, a few more rumblings about him possibly having Tennessee on his short list. Or is it his short list? I don't know if it's actually his short list or if it's a list that someone's come up with that thinks they know what Aaron Rodgers is thinking about doing. You know, obviously, you sit there and you look at the list of teams that are kind of been mentioned. Denver has been very prominent. Again, like I said, Tennessee, Pittsburgh is also has been said to possibly maybe throwing their name in the hat. Okay, here's my here's my thing about the whole this whole scenario. Okay, for first of all, with me being a Tennessee Titans fan, and I talk quite a bit of Titans football on this podcast, not as much as I'd like to, but we'll definitely get more going into it. But as much as we talk about the Titans, man, I'm a huge fan, and I am not interested in Aaron Rodgers being the quarterback of this franchise. I'm just going to be real with you. And a lot of people are probably going to look at me like I'm crazy. And now, and I get it. I get it. I, you know, if, right now, if I had to put money on it, I would say that Aaron Rodgers is going to end up in Denver. And I think that is the best spot for him, in my opinion. I've said that since day one. If it's not Green Bay, I think Denver would be the best spot. But I mean, you sit there and look at this Tennessee thing, man. I'm not feeling it, man. And the reason I'm not feeling it is his playoff record. I mean, we're trying to get, you know, even though, yes, Aaron Rodgers is far better quarterback than Ryan Tannehill is. And you sit there and you look back at the three interceptions against the Cincinnati Bengals in the AFC divisional game that he had, and especially the last one that ended the game, basically, because it gave Cincinnati the short field. What has Aaron Rodgers done in this last few playoffs that's really that much better? And we're talking about a team that's, you know, arguably, I mean, you could say Green Bay and Tennessee, you know, I think they're pretty much, I don't think there's much of a difference in personnel as far as, like, the talent level of each team. I mean, obviously Green Bay is built a little bit different than Tennessee when you look at them. You know, Tennessee loves to grind the ball. They love to grind the rock with Derrick Henry. And then you sit there, you look at Davante Adams. And Green Bay is more of a team that gets the ball up and down the field, like to throw it a little bit more. Well, I mean, I think I could make that comparison. Davante Adams and Derrick Henry will kind of cancel each other out, even though, yes, I understand Adams is a wide receiver, Derrick Henry is a running back. But you get what I'm saying? Both of those players are on elite levels at their position. Okay, so, you know, we're talking about teams that are pretty equal as far as I see it, as far as their level of talent. Okay? And Aaron Rodgers has failed the last two seasons at home. I think he's done it three times where they've had home field advantage and they have failed to make it out of the playoffs and get to the Super Bowl. So why would I want the Tennessee Titans to go out and get this guy that's older and on the back end of his career to go with a guy like Derrick Henry and then do the same thing that the Tennessee Titans have been doing, I mean, these last few years anyway? Why? I mean, I'm just not really interested in it. And maybe I'm crazy about that. Tell me if I'm crazy in the comments or whatever. If you're listening on Apple, or like I said, man, hit me up on Twitter. Am I crazy about thinking that I don't want Aaron Rodgers in Tennessee? I'm not saying that Ryan Tannehill is the answer, but I think I'd rather the Tennessee Titans explore other options in the future. And there is talk out there this past week that the Titans are looking at drafting a quarterback. Now, they're not looking at drafting a guy to necessarily replace Ryan Tannehill right now. And quite frankly, I don't think that guy exists in this draft anyway. I think you look at some of the top quarterbacks in this draft, you look at a guy like Pickett from Pittsburgh, you look at a guy here in the SEC like Matt Corral from Ole Miss. You have a guy like Sam Howell from North Carolina. You have Malik Willis from Liberty, the guy that, Liberty by way of Auburn. You have some guys out there that could fit that bill that they're looking, that they're saying that the Titans would possibly go ahead and try to draft and then kind of just let him develop. That is the rumor out there that the Titans are looking at possibly doing something around along those lines. There's also a guy like a Desmond Ridder coming out of Cincinnati. I think a couple of those guys are probably definitely going to be day two picks, in my opinion. And that's probably where the Titans are looking to maybe grab one of those guys. So I'm down with that. I'm down with either one of those guys. I kind of probably would be more partial to a guy like Malik Willis just because of his upside. I mean, this is a guy that, for my money, has a long way to go to really being a guy that's going to be a guy that you can really put a lot of trust in, because he threw a lot of interceptions this past season, and then he threw some of those in a couple of their biggest games, and he really did not look really good in their biggest game against Ole Miss this past season. That was the game where Hugh Freeze returned to the Grove, and Liberty and Malik Willis did not look good in that football game. That was really an opportunity missed for him. If he could have looked good in that game, I think you would see a lot more positive positive feel from the scouts and from the coaches and everybody, the GMs and, everybody involved about this guy, if he had really looked good on that stage. But he did not. And so he's thrown a lot of interceptions and things of that nature. So, but still, I think there's a lot of upside with him. And of course, there's a guy like Matt Corral. I think Matt Corral is going to be a first round guy along with Pickett. That's just my guess. I'm not really sure where those two guys are going to land. But I think both of those guys could go first round. And then I think maybe the other three guys that I mentioned, Howell, Ridder, Malik Willis, I think, all of those guys will probably be day two guys. That's what I'm thinking right now. So I'm fine with the Titans doing something like that and bringing a guy along. I'm just not fine with them going out and getting Aaron Rodgers. I'm just not, man. So, and then you look at Russell Wilson, what's going to happen with him? Because is he going to end up back in Seattle, or is he going to end up somewhere else? I mean, obviously there's a lot to talk about him. Not really sure how it's going to work out. Obviously, if I'm, to be perfectly honest with you, man, if I'm Pittsburgh, if I'm Denver, any of those teams I named above, anybody else is looking for a quarterback, I'm looking at Russell Wilson first if possible. That's just me. I mean, that's just me. I would rather go at Russell Wilson than Aaron Rodgers. I mean, as good as Aaron Rodgers is, we're talking about one of the best to ever do it. There's no question about it. But for my money, man, I'm going to Russell Wilson. Then, of course, there are other guys that we've got to mention. Carson Wentz, what is going to happen with him in Indianapolis? A lot of people are thinking that he is not going to be in Indy. I've seen rumblings about him, and they're getting louder about him ending up in Pittsburgh. I don't necessarily like that move for the Steelers. But I would get it. I would understand it. But again, for me, man, I'm like, look, I mean, Russell Wilson would be the guy some kind of way. I try to make that happen. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Jameis Winston is another guy that's being mentioned. Will he end up back in New Orleans? Obviously, the Saints are in the need for a quarterback. I am seeing that Michael Thomas is closer to being back with their team next season, their wide receiver. So, obviously, they need someone to throw him the football. Jameis Winston, they could do a lot worse. I mean, Winston looked pretty good before he had the ACL injury. He looked pretty good, I thought. I mean, and, you know, he was not throwing the ball all over the field, throwing the ball to the wrong jersey. I thought he looked pretty good in those first few games. Was he great? No. Was there still a lot of questions about him? Yes. But can the Saints do a lot worse than him? Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. They can. And I'm seeing in the news that he has begun throwing again after that knee injury. So that is a good sign that everything should be well with him when training camp starts. So we'll see if he ends up back in New Orleans, man. Very interesting stuff when you sit there. There's several quarterback moves that could be made here. Mitch Trubisky is another name in the NFL coming out of Buffalo. Where could he land? Obviously, I don't know if teams are going to be – he's going to be a little bit down the pecking order of these quarterbacks that I've named so far, but he's a name that you have to mention. So, yeah, it's going to be really exciting to see how all this turns out. And, again, it's looking like Tennessee Titans are right in the middle of that mix for a guy like Aaron Rodgers. Anyway. Yeah, so very interesting stuff going on in the National Football League. That quarterback carousel is going to be crazy. Anyway, man, we're going to get into a little bit of the NBA before I close out the show. And like I said, man, I'm going to get into – I gave you my favorite five players of all time in the NBA. Hakeem the Dream, Olajuwon, Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson, Dr. J, and one Michael Jordan. Those are my five favorite players of all time. Are there any players that could break that top five list of mine? And I guess there are. And I've come up with a few. Okay. Some of them might be, you know, some of them may be kind of long shots or whatever to a degree. But there are a couple of them that I think have a real shot, man. And I'm going to throw a few of them out there to you, because I'm looking, man, I'm sitting there like, man, I feel older knowing that these five guys are my guys. I mean, you know, I need someone to replace, you know, I need someone of today's era to throw into that mix. Okay. So first guy that I came up with, of course, is, you know, the Greek Freak. You know, again, this dude is he has enough career left. He's again, he's had a really good career. He's one of my favorite players of today's game. Maybe he may be my favorite player. He's right up there. This dude could absolutely break that top five, in my opinion. I mean, he does it all to a degree. Now, he's not the best perimeter shooter. We all know that. But he does it pretty decent. And we all know he does everything else on the floor. I mean, he's a great defender, and he really came along. I think he really turned that corner last year in the playoffs when he had to kind of put that team on his back and lead them to that world championship. Obviously, he had a big advantage against the Phoenix Suns. They could not match up with them, so that, you know, you have to throw that in there, but still. 50-point game and everything that he had in those NBA finals, this dude grew up right before our eyes, and he absolutely could break my favorite top five NBA players of all time list. He can absolutely do it. I'm not saying he's going to do it, but he could absolutely do it. Again, I have to go back to Ja Morant. He is another guy that absolutely can break into that top five list. There's no question about it, man. I mean, if you sit there and you look at, again, this past week, the amazing plays that this dude makes. But it's beyond that. It's, I mean, this dude is making this team better. They're right now third place in the West. In a lot of ways, I can make an argument that this is the second best team in the West, especially right now with the way Golden State is playing lately without Draymond Green. Now, I think once we get into the playoffs, I still would favor Golden State a little bit more, especially if Draymond is healthy. If Draymond isn't healthy, then all bets off. But if Draymond is there, I have to give the edge to Golden State. But that's simply because of the fact that we have not seen Memphis make it very far on that big stage yet. That doesn't mean they can't do it, though. You sit there and you look at the rest of this team. You look at guys like Dylan Brooks, who's set to come back here shortly. That's what they're hoping. Early March was the indication just a week or two ago. So hopefully that'll come to fruition. You sit there and look at Jaren Jackson Jr. We talked about Steven Adams early, the fantastic pass that he did to Ja the other night. And you think about, Desmond Bane, another guy that can kind of shoot the lights out when he wants to. This team is loaded, man. And they're going to be a tough out once we get to the playoffs. And a lot of that is because of Ja Morant. I mean, he is Ja Amazing, just like, simply Ja Amazing, just like the title of this episode says. Okay, so here, those are two guys that can absolutely break into my top five list. The next guy, Jalen Green. And I know you're probably going to look at me side-eyed on that one just a little bit because I'm talking about a guy that's a rookie, but kind of got to explain it a little bit. Jalen Green is a guy, obviously, right now he's a Houston Rocket, and I hope that continues. I hope that stays that way beyond his rookie deal and all of that. I'd like to see him stay in Houston. I'd like to see him grow, and we're already seeing the growth of this guy right before our eyes. He's averaging like 17, 18 points a game in the last month or so. He's starting to come along offensively. We're seeing better defense from him. Obviously, this dude has a long way to go. He's got to get in the weight room. I mean, he is, he's a lanky, kind of lanky guy when you sit there and look at him. Not a lot of weight on him. I don't know if you want to put a lot of weight on him, but he definitely needs to add maybe 10, 15 pounds to that frame. Unfortunately, we saw him in the dunk contest, and that was not a good look. But if you can get past that, this dude is starting to look really good. And obviously, he is another guy that we're not going to see much of because the Houston Rockets we're not the worst team in the league right now. We're the next worst. And I think we had two national TV dates earlier in the season. That's going to be it for the rest of the season. And it's going to be like that until further notice, until this team starts to get better. But, again, Jalen Green, the fact that I think he's athletic enough, and then the fact that he plays for my Houston Rockets gives him a really good chance at sliding into my top five if he continues to improve his game. Another guy that can definitely break into my top five list, LaMelo Ball. And for a lot of the same reasons that we like what we're seeing out of Ja Morant. Now, the Charlotte Hornets are not as successful as Memphis right now, but they're not doing bad. And I'll tell you what, I think, I like the future of this basketball team. I think, and you sit there and you look at the Hornets right now, their glaring weakness is in the middle. They need rim protection. That is their glaring weakness. There's no question about that. Because I think you sit there and you look at this team, and they're very solid just about everywhere else. You look at Rozier at the point, or however you want to look at it. I guess you could say LaMelo's running the point. I guess you got two guards basically just kind of freelancing everything or whatever, because either one of them can shoot the ball. Both of them can really lead the team. I guess actually probably LaMelo is more the point guard on the team, though, when I sit there and actually think about it. But either way you want to look at it, Terry Rozier in the backcourt. You've got a guy like Bridges in the front court. I really like the way this team is starting to come along, and if they get a couple more pieces and then they're able to figure out that thing with their rim protection, this is going to be a team that is going to be very hard to beat in a tough East, man. The East is ridiculous right now. When you sit there and you look at all the teams stacked up in the East, and you think about James Harden being in Philadelphia, you think about what Brooklyn possibly could be. Really good to see Kevin Durant come back Thursday night. You look at, obviously, the Miami Heat, the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, you got four really strong basketball teams right there. And then you sit there and think about a team like Charlotte, or, and then, of course, Chicago. Can't forget the Bulls. So I think Charlotte, you know, obviously it's going to be hard for them to really stand out amongst that crowd, but I think if they make a couple more moves and get some of their roster straightened out a little bit more, they're going to be a lot more competitive. And LaMelo Ball, man, this dude has all the, you know, the showmanship and all of that, but he's a really good facilitator on top of all of that. And he's a lot better shooter than I think any of us thought he would be. So, yes, LaMelo Ball for me could absolutely be a guy that could break my top five if he continues on the track that he's on right now. So those are a few of the guys that I really think could possibly one day break into that top five list of my favorite all-time players. It's going to be hard for them to do it. A couple other players that, again, they're kind of getting toward the back end of their career, though. Kawhi Leonard, who's, you know, always loved watching him play. Did not love watching him play as much as I thought I would when he went to the Clippers, though, man. That was kind of an odd look to me when you sit there and you see how the Clippers did without him in the playoffs last year. Paul George was kind of, you know, obviously took the lead of that basketball team, and he's, of course, injured this season as well. But, it was kind of odd to see that play out the way that it did with Kawhi, you know, kind of being the orchestrator of that whole thing. And then, you know, he played, you know, played well, but he was not the Kawhi, in my opinion, that we got used to in San Antonio and Toronto. That was just my opinion, especially San Antonio. So he's kind of taking a little bit of a dip. He was a guy that I could have definitely had at least in my top 10. Not sure about it, but if he's able to finish his career strong and he's able to get back from his surgery and everything, then I could see him possibly getting into that type of spot with me. And Kevin Durant is another guy. I mean, he's again, I did not like the fact that he left Oklahoma City and went to Golden State, the team that had down 3-2 just the season before. I did not like that. I mean, I still don't like it. I'm not holding it against him anymore or anything like that, because I think this guy has really turned it on, and he has definitely become more of a leader. We saw that last year in the playoffs. We saw that last year in the Olympics. And I think he still has some basketball left in him if he's able to stay healthy, where he possibly could get into that top five. It's possible. I don't think it will happen, but just kind of throwing that out there. And I think that, you know, Kevin Durant, obviously, is one of the most special players that we've ever seen. There's no question about that. When you think about a guy that's almost 7 feet tall that can just pull up from 30 feet like it's nothing, or he can just sit there and take you off the dribble. It's just ridiculous. And then he defends. He does everything else pretty well. Also, I just would love to have seen him finish that thing off and come back, settle your differences with Russ. Y'all work the thing out. Come back and see what you could have done against Golden State the next season. That's all I ask. That's all I ask. But obviously that did not happen. So anyway, those are a few guys that I can see possibly breaking into my top five. Again, those guys have a long way to go, and there's going to be some other guys as we go along here, but right now that top five is pretty solid. Anyway, let's get into some more NBA as I end this show, man. We're going to get into the LA Lakers. I mean, I don't know where to begin. I really don't. But, my guy, Mike Patton, he does a fantastic show called Touring the AFC South. If you have not taken a listen, you need to do so. He does a really excellent job breaking down everything AFC South. He has a lot of great guests on, a lot of guys that you would recognize, some guys from ESPN that covers the Titans and guys that cover the Jacksonville Jaguars and all of that. So he is, you know, he has a really good show. But one of the things that he does on his show is he does a rant on his show every week. So I'm not going to necessarily rant like him, and I'm definitely not going to steal that from him. I'm not going to call this a rant, but I'm about to go off on the L.A. Lakers, man. What we're seeing from that basketball team, if you want to call it a basketball team, is utterly ridiculous right now. I mean, this team is getting blown out on a nightly basis, and we're not talking about them getting blown out by the Bucks or the Sixers now with James Harden or the Heat or the anybody like that. We're talking about the Clippers. We're talking about the New Orleans Pelicans on national TV, no less. They lost by 30 to the New Orleans Pelicans the other night. And then they backed that game up, and they played pretty well in the first half. I thought maybe it was the best that I've seen the Lakers play in maybe this season, or at least definitely in the last couple of months without Anthony Davis. And they're still trailing at the half. I'm sitting there like, man, that's a lot more the way you like the Lakers to look. They're only down by 3 to the Clippers at halftime on TNT. I turned away from chucking them on Inside the NBA and all that. And I was looking at something else, and I turned the game back on as they had already gotten into the second half, and I turned the game on. They were already down by 20. And we were just talking about them maybe being 3-4 minutes into the second half. What in the hell is going on with this basketball team? And the thing that I hate the most, and the thing that I want to, if you want to call it a rant, okay, I'll call it a rant or whatever, but the thing that I want to go off about is just the complete, almost kind of ignorance to whatever is going on. It's like they're just completely ignoring what's going on with their own basketball team. It's like they don't see it, or and it's almost like they're trying to, I don't know how to describe it. It's almost like they're oblivious to what's going on. You sit there and you sit to interview Russ in the post game interviews, and he acts like, I mean, it's like, what? I mean, what are you coming down on me for? What are you talking to me for? When the reporter asks him about his performance or whatever. I mean, and then he goes into this whole thing, this whole shebang the other night, talking about, well, you know, I didn't really know what to expect. You know, I was just kind of coming over here to L.A. I'm just kind of continuing my career. There were no expectations. What are you talking about? Yeah, there were plenty of expectations from you. There were expectations from you that you were the missing piece for this basketball team to do what they did 2 seasons ago and win an NBA title. That was the expectation. Now, if you want to be real about it, I mean, I thought it was a really stupid expectation because I knew it wasn't going to happen. But to sit there and see this team look like this, I would never in a million years dream that I'd be sitting there looking at this team being blown out on consecutive nights by 30 points by two teams, one team that's going to be in the play. Well, actually, both teams are probably going to be in the play-in. I mean, are you kidding me right now? And it's like, Russell Westbrook is like, oh, well. LeBron, the same thing. In the second half of my, if you want to call it rant, we'll call it that, is this complete just, LeBron is completely innocent. None of this is his fault. I mean, look, There's no way you can sit there and actually believe that. And I got people on Twitter sitting there telling me, oh, man, LeBron, he doesn't have any say-so and none of that kind of stuff. Really? This roster is absolutely his fault. It's absolutely his fault. I got people on Twitter telling me that Rob Pelinka should force his hand. Rob Pelinka should put his foot down and all of these things. And I'm like, look, Rob Pelinka is the GM of this team, yes. And Rob Pelinka, I still can't believe he's still the GM of this team. I will say that. But, I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, Rob Pelinka is only going to be as it's only going to do as much as LeBron says he can do. That's just point blank simple. It just is. I'm not saying it's all LeBron's fault, but it's partially LeBron's fault. He helped put this team together. You're not going to sit there and tell me he didn't have a hand in bringing Russell Westbrook to L.A. You're not going to tell me that. And a lot of these other moves that they made, you're not going to tell me LeBron didn't have his fingerprints over all of it. And you can go back and do it whether it's Cleveland, whether it's Miami, you can sit there and go back and say the same things. And now, with everything going on, now, okay, well, this team's not showing effort. They're not getting back on defense. The offense looks terrible. I mean, you have a guy like Reeves, which don't get me wrong, he looks like he's a really good player, but let's be real. A guy like Reeves does not, I mean, if you're sitting there starting a guy like Reeves, you got some issues. Let's just be real about it. Okay? And now I'm seeing how much Frank Vogel is at fault for this. Frank Vogel needs to lose his job. Frank Vogel needs to be fired. I mean, are you kidding me right now? What does Frank, I mean, look, I mean, Frank Vogel, I'm not saying, obviously any coach is going to be, they're going to be, it's going to be on them partially at least. He's going to be responsible because he's the head coach, don't get me wrong. But we're talking about grown men that are making much more money in a lot of cases, several cases. They're making a lot more money than Frank Vogel has. You can't get up for a game. You can't show effort. You can't do some of the things you need to do to be a winner. You got to look at the coach. It's not. This isn't college. This isn't high school. This is the NBA, man. This is the pros. So they got a lot of problems right now in LA, man. You got a lot going on there, and I'm not really sure how that thing is going to work out. I would be at this point. I would not be surprised to see LeBron break jump ship and move on somewhere else, maybe back to Cleveland again. Obviously, we're seeing a lot of rumblings that he wants to be. He wants to play with Bronny when Bronny gets to the NBA and be the first father-son combination on the team, which that would be kind of cool to see. I'm not going to lie about that, but this thing in L.A. is a complete mess. Complete mess. I don't know. Crazy, man. Anyway, so we're going to end off the show with that. Wish I could end it off on a happier note, but that's just some of my thoughts of what we've seen in the NBA. Hope you enjoyed the show. My name is Kerry Wood, at C Wood on Sports on Twitter, and IG is where you can find me. Again, I've enjoyed bringing you the latest episode of Ball About the South with C Wood. Again, join us next week, man. Come back next week. We're going to talk a lot more March Madness. We'll get deep into the tournament in the SEC. And we'll talk some other tournaments around. We'll talk some Memphis basketballs there in the American Athletic Conference tournament and everything. We'll talk some UAB is there in the Conference USA tournament. We'll kind of get all of that going next week as we get ready for the big tournament, the big dance the next week. And Selection Sunday and all of that right here on Ball About the South. Again, I appreciate you joining me. I'm out till next week.